A mystery loomed over a small New York town when 36-year-old Jennifer Ramsaran mysteriously disappeared on December 11, 2012. Months later, her remains were discovered along a remote roadside, revealing unexpected truths that no one could have ever imagined. I'm Jelsey May, and this is Exhibit May. Jennifer Ramsaran was born on April 8, 1976 in Albany, New York, and made a lasting impact on her community. She served as a devoted Girl Scout troop leader, conducted knitting classes and Sunday school at St. Paul's, and excelled as an artist, winning numerous awards for her paintings, ceramics, and floral designs. People would call her the Martha Stewart because of her artistic flair and also passion for cooking. Beyond her talents, Jennifer was a wonderful and loving wife, mother, daughter, and sister. Jennifer tied the knot with her college sweetheart, Ganesh Ramsaran, also known by his middle name, Remy, on July 18, 1999, and together they had three children, Kara Lynn, Glenn Robert Walker, and Nicole Claire. While Remy focused on advancing in his career and served as a project manager for IBM, mostly working from home, Jennifer devoted herself to being a stay-at-home mom. While Jen was sweet and quiet, Remy was known to be quite loud and energetic, yet somehow their dynamic worked well. They lived in a charming home by the lake, nestled in the remote upstate New York town of New Berlin, where the population barely reached 1,000 people. With a wonderful marriage, beautiful kids, a dream home, and a great job, Remy said he lived the perfect life. On the chilly winter day of December 11th, 2012, it began much like any other for the Ramsaran family. According to Remy, the children woke up, gave their mom a morning hug, and went to prepare breakfast and pack their lunches.
I remember seeing my mom that morning. I gave her the hug in the morning, and then I went to go make my breakfast and lunch. My dad drove us.
When I came home, Jen was eating Chobani yogurt and Kashi cereal at the table, and she was on her iPod Touch. And then I went to the living room, and I sent some emails and certain things to that effect. That morning, she was supposed to go to Syracuse, gave me a kiss on the cheek, and then she left.
Around 10:30 a.m., Jennifer departed in her red Chrysler minivan and navigated 60 miles to the mall through challenging, winding backcountry roads. Remy went for a run and eventually arrived at the local YMCA. As the day progressed and the sky darkened, he started to worry when he didn't receive any texts from his wife all day.
It gets dark kind of early, and Jen does like driving in the dark and stuff, and she was supposed to be home like around 4:30, 5 o'clock-ish anyways. Car accident was the big one. I really thought some type of car accident.
He reached out to her best friend, Aileen Sales, to inquire if she had heard from Jennifer.
Well, he actually called me that night she didn't come home and asked if I had heard from her, and I said no. My heart sunk. I was scared to death.
Jennifer and Aileen had met through their daughters in Girl Scouts, and their families had grown very close.
We would say good morning to each other on text. She'd either say it or I would say it first. I mean, she was always there for me. Always. No matter what I needed.
Concerned that Jennifer may have been involved in a car accident due to slippery winter roads, Remy dialed 911.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
My wife left this morning between 10 and 11, and she hasn't been back, and I'm really freaked out. And this is totally unlike her, and none of our friends have heard from her. I called my in-laws.
Have you attempted the cell phone?
Oh, yes. That's how I've been trying to call her.
Okay.
I've called her numerous times and texted her, and no response.
I told him the reason why I'm worried is I haven't heard from her since about 11 when she left, which is highly unusual.
Officers began searching for accident reports and checking hospitals, but there were no signs of Jennifer. As morning approached and daylight filled the sky, Remy, who had spent the entire night filled with worry, reached out to his best friend, Jason Wicks, who suggested trying the Find My iPhone app. After dropping the kids off at school, Remy went directly to the police department and used the Find My iPhone app with the police chief.
And lo and behold, it connected to her iPhone. and it looked like the phone was moving, and I was freaking out.
To their surprise, it connected to Jennifer's iPhone, which was nearly 20 miles outside of town at the intersection of Moon Hill Road in the town of Plymouth. When officers arrived and conducted a search, they found nothing, so Remy decided to go and look for himself. Upon reaching the location, he parked his car, pulled out his phone, and opened the app. As he exited the car and walked towards the water bank, he pressed the play button option but couldn't hear anything.
I'm hitting the play sound, and it's a high, shrieking, loud sound. And I walked the bank, and I didn't hear anything yet. And then I crossed the street, and I started hearing it, and I looked. And then I saw it. I immediately called 911.
I found my wife's iPhone. I'm on Moon Hill Road in South Plymouth. I haven't touched it. I can see it from here. Can you send someone out here?
While the police treated the situation as a missing persons case and refrained from immediately launching large-scale searches, Jennifer's father took matters into his own hands. After 5 long days of tireless searching, his efforts finally paid off. He found Jennifer's red van abandoned at an apartment complex 8 miles from her house.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Schnagel's here.
Yes.
Tom Rams, Jennifer Ramsaran's father?
Yes.
I found the van.
When investigators arrived at the scene to inspect the van, they found it empty. But upon closer examination, they discovered traces of blood. As people began forming theories about what could have happened to Jennifer, her best friend Aileen harbored a secret. While Remy devoted his time to training for marathons, Jen found herself drawn into a competition of her own. She began playing an online game called Kingdoms of Camelot, where players from all around the world would take on medieval roles and team up to wage battles together. She interacted with strangers from all around the internet, gradually becoming more withdrawn from her reality.
She would show me like pictures of her castle and her kingdom that she was building on the phone. She just wanted to be on her game. And I would joke around about, you know, come back to the real world, you know, pull yourself out of that game. She was definitely sucked into it.
It started turning into addiction. And she was on it quite a lot, close to 8 hours a day, maybe more, even in the evenings.
During a recent shopping trip together, all Jen talked about to Aileen was her online game and the new friends she had made, particularly a British man named Rob.
And she would joke around about, you know, things they would talk about, you know, because in England it's different than it is here, so different. And I think she liked that.
Jen confessed that her online friendship had become flirtatious and expressed a desire to visit the store in the mall that sold cologne so she could know what he smelled like.
We swung into the mall and she wanted to smell his cologne. And we did. We smelled his cologne.
Additionally, Jen's appearance began to change as she started wearing more makeup and taking daily selfies, even going as far as sending him lingerie in the mail.
One day I would stop by and she had makeup on. She said she was taking pictures of herself. And she would doll herself up, take pictures. And I thought, you know, that's fine. But on the other hand, it was kind of strange. Rob knew where she lived and was thinking about relocating, coming up here. I said, what if he does come up here? And she kind of giggled. I didn't know if he was really from England. What if he was closer? You know, people lie online all the time.
After Aileen disclosed information about Rob to the authorities, they reached out to him through the gaming app and inquired if he had been in contact with Jennifer.
We sent him messages through the gaming app. You know, this is the Chenango County Sheriff's Office. Jennifer's been reported missing. We're wondering if you had any contact with her. Well, Jennifer had sent some sort of lingerie, and he had sent her, I believe it was $150. I believe it was for her to buy herself a gift. You know, this is early December. It's close to Christmas time.
Rob confessed to being married and used the word intimate to describe his relationship with Jennifer. However, he clarified that he hadn't communicated with her for several days and expressed concern for her well-being. As detectives investigated his story, Aileen informed Remy about his wife's online romance.
When I told him, he was furious. You know, he's what? You know, she was, I said, you know, this man online knows where she lives.
Feeling betrayed and furious, Remy turned to his best friend Jason for sympathy, but he found none because Jason also harbored a secret.
Why are you so mad at the possibility that she was having an affair? And I was like, Remy, I mean, you've been having an affair yourself.
Remy was having an affair with Jennifer's best friend, Aileen Sales. The affair between Remy and Aileen had begun nearly a year before Jen disappeared. They had been spending a lot of time together training for marathons, and it was during one of these sessions that Remy had an epiphany while running in the Arizona heat.
And it was one of the first marathons I wanted to try and run without drinking a drop of water. There was like streaks of salt on my back, and I started cramping up and hurting, but I didn't give up. I'm still going. And a song came on by the Christian rock band Skillet, Tomorrow's One Day Too Late. And as I'm running, my mind just drifted. And that song hit home. And I love that song. And the person that came to my mind was Aileen.
It was only a few weeks later that Remy confessed to Aileen that he was falling for her, and the two kissed.
I asked her if I could kiss her, and I did, and we both felt extremely guilty.
And then I left, just like that. Sat in my car for a minute, thinking, what did I just do? My gut was telling me, no, you can't do this. It's wrong. It's so wrong.
Despite feeling guilty, not long after the first kiss, they took their relationship to the next level. Even though Aileen was also married with kids, she found herself falling in love with Remy as well.
To feel that someone cared like he did. Everyone wants to feel that importance. I felt invincible.
While Remy informed Aileen that he had planned to divorce Jen, Aileen had already separated from her husband Pat and moved out, although he was unaware of the reason. But things took a turn just a few weeks before Jen disappeared when Aileen ended things with Remy and returned home. However, she and Remy weren't completely finished and were together the day before Jen went missing.
I did not want to further the relationship at that point. It was too much. It got to be too much. I needed to help Jen. I needed them to find her, and I would do anything to help them at that moment.
When investigators brought Remy in for questioning, he initially misled them by claiming his marriage was intact, but he soon admitted that he and Aileen had fallen in love but denied having any dark secrets.
I don't have anything in my life to feel embarrassed about except that. You know, yes, Aileen and I fell in love, but I don't have any deep, dark secrets. There is no, I don't drink, I'm not a wife beater, I'm not a kid beater, I'm nothing. People have affairs, it is what it is.
He proceeded to recount the events of the morning, explaining that he dropped off the kids, did some work, and said goodbye to Jen as she left for shopping, while he went for a run, providing the police with precise details of his route through town. Meanwhile, Detective Cobb continued to investigate Jennifer's online friend from the UK with whom she had been involved in an online relationship and requested that US Immigration run a check on his passport. When the agency reported back stating that Rob had not entered the US in 2012, he was cleared as a potential suspect. However, Remy still insisted that Jen must have run off with someone.
I've told that to the police many times. Many times. She went to go meet someone.
The first thing I thought was these people on the game. And that's what I thought in my heart.
The police persisted in investigating the case as a potential homicide, despite Jennifer still being officially classified as a missing person. They had the van and the phone, but lacked a body. Until that fateful night when Remy received a phone call that would change his life forever. At 11 o'clock that evening, the phone rang at Remy's home and the police informed him they were outside.
I went downstairs, I unlocked the door, and that's when I was told that a body was found. Is it my wife? Are you sure? That was heart-wrenching. Heart-wrenching. I called all three kids into the master bedroom and I told the kids, Mommy's in heaven, but she's always going to be with us. That's probably the most difficult thing I've ever had to do.
It was awful. The grief. And I knew at this point, there's no telling her I'm sorry.
As the snow began to melt, Jennifer's naked body was discovered on an embankment approximately 20 miles from her house, just 3 miles away from where the phone had been found.
Anyone that knows me, I'm a great father. I was also a really good husband. Yes, I cheated on my wife. However, I was a great father. People have affairs all the time and they wind up killing their wives. It is what it is. I don't know what it is. I didn't do anything. Here's the thing. If I had done anything to my wife, would I have gone out and try and find her phone? Would I try and help and answer every question to the police? I should have lawyered up right off the bat. You have to remember, my life was absolutely fantastic. I had the perfect life. I had a wife, had a girlfriend, had kids. I have everything anyone would want. The worst thing to have ever happened to me is Jen go missing. Absolutely worst thing.
Despite Remy's tears, one by one, people around town heard about their secrets and began to turn against not just him, but Aileen as well.
And they spun it around on me. You know, say I was lying. And I wasn't. And I was truthful from the beginning. And all I wanted to do was help, you know, and that crushed me. You know, and I couldn't stand up for myself. You know, there's nothing I can say to make anyone believe me. And why would they? It felt awful.
As investigators worked on eliminating Remy as a suspect, they started examining Jen's cell phone records. They discovered that her cell phone was last connected to the home Wi-Fi network at 10:57 a.m. on December 11th, contradicting Remy's statement that Jen had already left for shopping around 10:30 a.m.
Well, we were starting to collect different surveillance videos from various convenience stores, banks, anywhere along the route that Mr. Ramsaram claimed he ran from the residence to the YMCA. So his alibi of running this certain route appears to be false. So we have all these things that are now taking the focus off this could be anybody and putting it really on Mr. Ramsaran.
These suspicions escalated when investigators found a bloodstain on the couple's mattress and on Remy's sweatshirt, the very one he had worn on the day Jen disappeared.
His dad called me and said they found blood on his sweatshirt. And I thought, but I'm thinking to their house and how messy the house was. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe it's old blood. Just little things were starting to play in my head and it scared me.
Regarding Aileen, the detective managed to confirm her alibi for the time Jen disappeared despite inconclusive results from her polygraph test. She was indeed at work that morning, but not in the afternoon. Both she and Remy confirmed this to the investigators. After his run, Aileen picked Remy up from the YMCA and drove him home. Despite her alibi checking out, investigators pondered whether she might not have been directly involved in the murder, but rather played a role in covering it up.
We still had the question, though, that Aileen picked Mr. Ramsaran up from the YMCA shortly after 1 o'clock that afternoon.
They thought I wasn't giving them everything, in which I was. You know, if I had more, I would have given it. I would have given anything to help.
3 months later, additional forensic evidence arrived with the autopsy report.
Well, he was able to rule out any natural cause for her death, any toxicological cause for her death. He ruled out suicide, and he didn't find any accidental cause. So, I mean, essentially, you're left with homicide.
I get a phone call. Can you come on down? We have those medical results. We'll finally get to talk to him and tell you exactly what happened.
Well, we wanted one more shot at interviewing Mr. Ramsaran.
What's the truth? What do you have in there? I have the truth.
Did you kill Jen? You had something.
I never.
You did. Your alibi is bull. And clearly, I don't know why you think you're on camera running past these places. You're not. I don't know why you cannot get that in your head, Remy. That the camera doesn't lie, the person does. And you're the one lying about it.
I like to leave.
No, you're not leaving. I've already told you that. Sit down. You're not leaving. You're under arrest.
Although police eventually released Aileen as a suspect, they arrested Remy nearly 3 months after the discovery of Jennifer's body, but he maintained his innocence while facing second-degree murder charges and remained in jail until he stood trial in 2014. In September 2014, facing a potential life sentence in prison, Remy informed the jury that his wife Jennifer had undergone changes in the months leading up to her disappearance, and they had discussed the possibility of divorce. But he was adamant that he didn't have any involvement in her death.
I think that the defendant was obsessed with his girlfriend Eileen Sales. He was constantly asking Miss Sales to leave her husband so that they could be together.
So when December 11th rolled around, it was time for him to get rid of his wife.
The DA played some of those many jail calls between Remy and Eileen.
You know, I look at my ring finger every day, and I just imagine your name right on there. You're a gift from God. You were meant for me. And I know it was meant for you, right?
Jennifer was going to get custody. And why is that important? That gives him another reason, another motive to kill his wife.
Feeling unsettled while seated in the gallery as Remy testified, Aileen chose to listen from outside the courtroom. Despite her discomfort, Aileen remained convinced he was lying.
I knew he was lying. You know, I could tell some of the things he was saying. I needed to hear. I needed to hear how he was talking, how it was sounding coming out of his mouth.
Later, Aileen re-entered the room and took the stand, recounting her testimony.
It was very hard. You know, who wants to talk about their sex life in front of so many people? And for it to be written in the papers, for your kids to read. He knew I was back home, and he was angry. And I think Jen had decided that I'm moving on too, and I think he just couldn't handle it. I just think he just snapped.
She stated that on the day Jennifer disappeared, Remy had phoned her requesting a ride home from the gym. However, when she picked him up and dropped him off at home, she was surprised that despite their intimacy the day before, he didn't invite her inside and made no attempt to make any further advances.
He got out. He said, I know you're busy. And never invited me in. Nothing. And that's one of the things that, looking back, why didn't he invite me in?
The defendant was always interested in sexual relations when he was alone with his girlfriend. That afternoon, the defendant didn't ask her to come into the house to be alone so they could be together.
Because, ladies and gentlemen, he wasn't interested in relations that day because he had other things on his mind. He had just killed his wife, and he had to think about what he had to do next to try and not get caught.
Remy claimed to have been working on his computer that morning, yet forensic experts who examined the device found no evidence of any work being done during those hours. Once more, his narrative contradicted the evidence presented. According to court statements, it was theorized that Remy had likely murdered his wife, possibly in their bedroom, which is why he never invited Aileen inside. Between 11:15 a.m. and 11:30, he departed the scene with his wife's body in a van, later discarding it at a remote location. Subsequently, he disposed of the phone at Moon Hill Road.
There wasn't any damage, so to us that said that somebody had actually, you know, come down here and placed the phone.
I found it. Come on down. I'm going to wait for you. Found it because he put it there.
McBride stated that following the placement of the undamaged phone and the abandonment of the van at the apartment complex, Remy jogged a short distance to the YMCA. This was where he was captured on videotape for the first time, casually walking into the facility, stretching his arms, and behaving as if nothing were amiss. The district attorney also emphasized to the jurors that it was Remy who discovered the phone the following day. Rob from England, a previous person of interest, was also called upon to testify. Over Skype, he informed the jury that he became concerned that morning when Jennifer abruptly left amid their game, which was very odd because she had never left the game without explanation. 15 minutes later, Rob sent her a text message saying, "Where did you go?" That message went unanswered, and Rob never heard from Jennifer again.
Zero mention of, I'm leaving the house to go shopping today. Zero mention of that. In those three messages, you get the clear picture. She had no intention of leaving the house that day.
The DA believed that was a key moment that tied his theory together. Remy caught her playing the game in bed and, in a fit of rage, fatally harmed her right there in the bedroom. This would account for the blood spot on the mattress as well as a blood stain on the sweatshirt Remy wore that day.
The police did a very shoddy job here. And why? Because they concentrated on Mr. Ramsaran from day one. as the suspect. Yes, Mrs. Ramsaran died. We don't know how she died. We don't know when she died. But he did not do it. Mr. McBride said in his opening that he left at 11:30. If he left at 11:30, I have the easiest case in the world, because it is impossible, time-wise, to have done that trip in an hour and 12 minutes, drop a body, get out and place a phone, come back, and then walk to the YMCA. Just can't do it. And I argued to the jury, you can't see this person walking because there's still another 75 feet further that the camera doesn't see.
I'm scared of my death that they're gonna send me to jail or prison. But here's the thing, I have truth on my side. I did nothing wrong, I did nothing. I would never harm my wife.
After 3 weeks of trial and 3 weeks of deliberation, Remy was found guilty and convicted to one count of indictment, second degree murder, and sentenced to 25 years to life.
I had so many emotions, I can't even tell you. It was emotion overload. My girls need their mom back. I know that Jen and Remy's kids, that can't happen. And I sometimes think to my, why should I be happy? Why should I be happy when I can move forward, I can move on, but her kids don't have a mom. If I hadn't walked into their lives, even for Girl Scouts, they would still be together. The guilt, the regret, the heartache, it's overwhelming. And it's hard to not think of every second of every day.
Following the 2014 murder trial, the judge wrote that the defendant's lawyer, Mr. Garcia, was notably unprepared and lacked experience to such an extent that he relied on Google for help.
And then he puts Remy on the stand, doesn't have a single conversation with him about the case.
He said, you know, Remy, you're a very spontaneous person. If you are prepped, it's going to come across robotic, not genuine. We don't want that. We don't want you prepped.
Here's a guy who loves to talk. He's got no direction. The questions are poorly framed. And so on cross-examination, it's a complete disaster. It was kind of unclear what type of law he practiced, what sorts of cases he handled. It was kind of all over the place.
I think the Ramsarans stumbled upon somebody who was a very good salesman. And they don't know enough to realize that he actually didn't know anything that he was talking about.
Remy's family paid over $126,000, which was meant to hire experts and fund research to help try the case, only to discover that despite Garcia's appearance, attire, and verbal presentation suggesting otherwise, he lacked expertise in law, had never handled a murder case, and primarily dealt with civil issues such as bankruptcy and divorce. On October 6, 2022, the judge overturned the conviction of Remy Ramsaran and ordered a new trial, citing the defense lawyer's shocking conduct.
I always had faith it would happen.
I mean, there's two different things. There's one, not getting a fair trial, but someone could still be guilty and not get a fair trial.
Yeah, I just don't think he did. I don't even think the Eileen thing would have ever caused him to do any sort of harm to my mom. I think it would have been highly more likely for my mom to have just left the house, but for any violence to occur is insane. I still don't see how murder would have been a solution to any problem.
There was blood on the sweatshirt, but there's no way scientifically to tell whose it is because it was a mixture. So it could have been Jen's DNA and his blood. Could have been her blood and his DNA. Could have been both of them, you know, you just don't know. So that really wasn't of any value.
Under Jennifer Ramsaran's fingernails was male DNA.
It was a partial profile of male DNA. Their expert said it was not enough to conclusively identify a person, but she could say it did not come from Remy.
If you know anything about DNA under fingernails, most experts will testify that it has to be, it's not from a handshake, right? It's not from me touching Dave's leg quickly. It's from some sort of, you know, actual contact.
Combine another man's DNA under her fingernails with the van being driven by someone else, it suddenly was a very interesting defense the second time around.
On Thursday, October 26th, 2023, Remy accepted a plea bargain for a reduced charge of manslaughter by acknowledging his involvement in his wife's death and was handed a new sentence of 22 years.
I think there was challenges from both sides. I think we had a difficult job. It's very hard to reinvestigate a case that's 10 years old, but it's also extremely difficult to prosecute a case that's 10 years old.
So we're gearing up for trial, and we started talking about plea offers. At one point, the defense approached me asking if I would take a plea or accept a plea. And I said, all right, listen, I'll talk to the parents about it. I'll go up today. We met with the parents and went over the pros and cons, and they wanted him to go into that courtroom and say that he was guilty.
In October 2023, he pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of manslaughter. There would be no second trial.
He admitted to killing his wife, the mother of those kids.
Instead of possibly spending the rest of his life in prison, Remy was sentenced to 22 years. But with time served, his attorneys expect he'll serve less than half.
Today, Remy Ramsaran remains serving time at Chenango County Custody.
One thing about me, I'm straightforward, I tell it like it is. Always been wrongfully accused. And that's the tip of the iceberg. And you might think that I'm arrogant or this or that. I have nothing to hide. I've always told the truth. I'm a classic oversharer. And guess what? In all of my interviews with the cops and everything else, I've never said anything to incriminate myself. What convicted me were people and their words, people and their lies, especially the cops. It's the truth. My life was perfect. I had a great life, period. It's not I had another woman. What a lot of people didn't understand, and I didn't want to say it when I interviewed with you originally, we had threesomes. It was my wife, Eileen, and myself. There is no issues. And it was going on for a while. What did they have on me? Nothing, because I didn't do anything. Prison is easy. It's crazy to say. I'm a guy, Mr. Corporate America. Charles Schwab and Company, American Express, IBM. Prison is freedom. Have you ever been in prison? It is hilarious. You can get cell phones. You can get anything you want in prison if you are looking for it. I'm telling you, prison's a joke. Prison has a lot of freedom. You can get basically anything you want. Do you know what freedom is in there? There's so much freedom like you wouldn't believe. It is insane. Bottom line, I am innocent. I've always been innocent. Find out whose DNA is underneath my wife's fingernails.
Eileen expressed that even now, after many years have passed, reflecting on the events still grips her like a nightmare she can't wake up from. Yet she emphasizes that she'll never stop thinking about her friend.
As a beautiful woman that she was, kind and loving, would do anything for anyone. And she did those things for me. You know, you can't take back what you've done, but what we shared as friends, I will always hold close to my heart, our talks and the things we did. I'm so very sorry. So very sorry.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate the show, and follow me on Instagram at Exhibit May Podcast.